40 years ago, a step was taken, a clear step was taken towards peace on this island. The signing of the Anglo-Irish Agreement facilitated the early stages of the Northern Ireland peace process and ultimately the Good Friday Agreement. Have a little listen to this.
I went into this agreement because I was not prepared to tolerate a situation of continuing violence. I want to offer hope to young people particularly that the cycle of violence and conflict can be broken.
Our purpose is to secure equal recognition and respect for the two identities in Northern Ireland. Nationalists can now raise their heads, knowing that their position is and is seen to be on an equal footing with that of members of the Unionist community.
Its purpose is to try to bring together and to support all of those people in Northern Ireland who wish to end violence and to proceed in a democratic way. That is its purpose. We really entered this agreement in good faith and earnestly to bring that about. The Taoiseach, as a nationalist and a Republican, myself, as a Unionist and a Loyalist.
Yeah, there you go. That's the then British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and the then Taoiseach Garret Fitzgerald on the signing of the Good Friday Agreement 40 years ago. One of those who was involved in this negotiation was the then Taoiseach and leader of the Labour Party, Dick Spring, who's with me on the line. Dick, good morning to you and thanks for joining us in the programme this morning.
Good morning, Gerry, and good morning to your listeners, and thank you for having me on in relation to something that happened 40 years ago. Listening to Garret and Margaret Thatcher there was really a trip down memory lane.
What are your memories of it? How difficult was it to get across the line? And how significant was it as an agreement to give, I suppose, the Irish side of things, the Irish state, some formal say in the North?
Well, it was extremely difficult, Gerry. And it's, in some respects, it's actually difficult to even appreciate how difficult it was, being that it was 40 years ago, and indeed longer than 40 years ago, because we started negotiations in 1992. And at that time, 82, beg your pardon, and in 1982, Margaret Thatcher had said openly that as far as she was concerned, that the Irish government had no involvement or no entitlement to have any involvement in the affairs of Northern Ireland. It was strictly for the British government. So when you think that we brought her from that position to a position where she agreed that the Irish government, for the first time since partition, would have a day-to-day involvement in the administration of Northern Ireland. That was quite a journey, and a lot of work went on that we had the opportunity for reflecting on it over the last 2 weeks at various conferences, which I have to say was worth doing because we had British civil servants and Irish civil servants who were very involved, reflecting from their positions. Sadly, there weren't too many politicians available because I seemed to be the last man standing.
You do indeed. And to underline that difficulty, as you've said, Margaret Thatcher later said she regretted signing the agreement. So did she have to be really pushed by Ronald Reagan and others to give that concession?
I think in the first instance, great credit goes out to Michael Illes and David Goodall, who was his counterpart on Thatcher's team. And Michael Illes, in various meetings with David Goodall, outlined what he saw as a way of making progress on the island of Ireland and trying to eliminate the violence on the island. As even Margaret Thatcher said there, one of her main aims was to stop the violence and give hope to young people. We were fortunate that David Goodall, who had an Irish background, Wexford, I think, was his parentage, and also Lord Armstrong, Margaret Thatcher's Secretary of the Cabinet, they had a great sense that an injustice had been done to Ireland over the centuries, and they wanted to see if Britain could actually change that and if they could influence Margaret Thatcher. And they worked very hard to influence her because primarily, I think, her interest in Ireland was in relation to security. It wasn't big on her agenda. She had other things, and you will recall the fallout during the Falklands War, where Mr. Haughey did not support the British position. That caused problems as well. And, of course, ultimately, the Brighton bombing in 1994, just a short time before the signing of the agreement. We were fortunate that the civil service kept us on track in the negotiations because, you know, if it happened to any other politician where the IRA tried to kill her and nearly killed her as it happened, you would understand if she walked away from the proceedings.
Yeah, it was not the story of the times, really, and goes back to the difficulty of all of it. You'd be talking, you'd be trying to move things forward, slow, methodical, difficult, inch by inch, and then a bomb would go off, setting everything back.
Absolutely. I mean, there were horrific times, and it's very difficult, as I said at the outset, to understand what the situation was like on the ground on the island of Ireland, and indeed in Britain as well, and in other parts of Europe where the IRA were active. It was a very difficult background, but the one thing I think that came out of our meeting, our particular meeting in Chequers, where Gareth, Peter Barry and I spent about 3 days with Margaret Thatcher and her team, was the resolution that something had to be done. I mean, that was the bottom line. Something had to be done in relation to Northern Ireland, otherwise the violence and the killings and the desperation would continue into the future. And both teams, I think, came out of Chequers, despite the out remarks by Margaret Thatcher later, both teams were determined that we, as politicians, had a responsibility to make progress in relation to the conflict on the island.
And was it all about getting something signed? Something that couldn't be gone back on, no matter how difficult it did get afterwards?
Well, we did learn from Sunningdale that the Council of Ireland in Sunningdale in 1974 had been a step too far, particularly for the Unionists and for Paisley and the Hardliners. And it was a question of putting in place an edifice that could not be pulled down. And the good thing was that the Anglo-Irish Agreement couldn't actually be pulled down. There were very difficult times in Belfast after it. The people, our civil servants, all of whom I met last Tuesday in the Department of Foreign Affairs, who were living in Maryfield, it was called the bunker, because they were surrounded by security and by a lot of protests, but they were able to carry out their functions and they stuck with it and indeed went through very difficult times to make sure that the Anglo-Irish Agreement was implemented from the outset.
Does Margaret Thatcher deserve credit? Or did she have to be dragged kicking and screaming? Like, she was under her own pressures. She had her own persona, maybe her own ego coming into it as well.
Well, you know, with considered reflection, yeah, she does deserve credit. I mean, she afterwards said that Gareth got the glory and she got the blame. She didn't get a lot of it from the agreement in the initial period, and I think she regretted it. At the same time, I would give her credit for having taken it on. There wasn't the same pressure on her, probably, as there was on us at the time. She took it on, she took risks, and I will, give credit where credit is due. She was under a lot of pressure from her Unionist supporters, from Enoch Powell and others who were big influence on her. And she took the brave step and said she would sign the agreement. And a lot, I have to say, I've said this publicly, went credit goes to Gareth Fitzgerald, who, really, really pushed her and pushed her in his own nimble way to make sure that she signed the agreement.
Dick, did you ever think we'd get to where we are today, 40 years ago, in those dark times, and the dark times that were to follow, the murders, the bombing, the massacres, effectively, that happened, and the steps backwards? Did you ever think we'd be where we are today?
Well, there were times, Jerry, when I would have been very despondent because I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. But the bottom line was that you couldn't take that as the end of the solution. We had to keep working at it. And like all these things, I often say to my grandkids, the longest journey starts out with small steps. And the Anglo-Irish Agreement was the first step, if you like, in relation to what ultimately became the Good Friday Agreement. Out of all of this, for me, the guns are silent. There's an acceptance that we solve political problems by negotiations and by constitutional means, as John Hume had been saying for the previous 20 years. And we are in a much better place. It's not perfect by any matter of means, but we are in a much better place now, 40 years later, than we were in the very dark times of the 70s and 80s in particular.
Yeah. OK, Dick, stay with me for a minute. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to get one more thing with you in relation to what's happening today. We'll get to that after we take these. Yeah, we're talking with former Taoiseach leader of the Labour Party, Dick Spring, about the 40th anniversary of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. And Dick, I wanted to ask you in just a few minutes that we've left about what's happening today. You've been speaking, obviously, there's been a number of events to commemorate this anniversary. And you've been talking about, I suppose, where Northern Ireland is and the importance, you said there, of the guns being silenced is one thing. But where are we in terms of a border poll? The current Labour Party leader, Ivana Bacic, is saying that she wants a border poll sooner rather than later. But you are urging caution. Are we ready? Is the North ready? Is the country ready overall for unification?
The island of Ireland is not ready for a border poll, in my view. And I'm reluctant to get involved in day-to-day politics, as you well know. when I
understand
off,
that.
When I was asked to leave, exit left the stage, I'm quite happy to let the present day politicians deal with it. But there is so much work to be done on the island of Ireland. Now, let me give you two examples. The education system, north and south, very different. Education is segregated in Northern Ireland. We have a very different system down here. The legal system, north and south, is very different. I'll give you a third example. The education system, the legal system, the health services are totally different. And I know that some work has actually commenced in relation to these areas, but I would say to you right now that you probably would need about a five-year space to actually look at these areas in particular and to see if you could get agreement on the island of Ireland as to how these circumstances or these areas could be amalgamated, even if you were to have an all-island strategy. My preference at the moment is we develop the economy, north and south, and the trade between the north and the south has improved dramatically in the last number of years, and there's room for further improvement. And I think if you have economic success, that may lead to political success, but I don't get the impression from trips to Northern Ireland that the unionist community are in any way ready to get involved in a border poll or in a discussion about United Ireland. And obviously we need their consent and we need them to be involved.
Even on that schools element of it, less than 8% of children in Northern Ireland are in integrated schools. If you even talk about, what about the different systems, like less than 8% share a classroom with someone from the other community.
I think it's 8%. That's
minuscule.
Figure for Educate Together in Northern Ireland. It is minuscule and it's a difficulty. And the authorities on both the Catholic and the non-Catholic education systems have to look at this and look to the future and to see if they're going to integrate and if they're going to work together. I mean, that in itself is a huge complication in relation to our education system. And the same, I think, goes across the board. They have a national health service in the Northern Ireland, the same as they have in the UK. We don't. We have a different health service under pressure, as you know. But again, the amalgamation there. And the other aspect, of course, is the governance of the island. You know, there's a lot written and a lot over the last 40 or 50 years. Would you have joint authority? Would you have a federal system? Would Stormont still exist? And it's not, unfortunately, Stormont isn't working very well at the moment. I would make that a priority to get the politicians in Northern Ireland to start working together for the betterment of the population in Northern Ireland. So that there's an awful lot of work to be done, and I think it should be done slowly and calmly, and to make sure that we don't go back to the horrors we had for the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, indeed. One final point, Dick. It's another anniversary today. We're talking about the 40th anniversary of the Anglo-Irish Agreement, but it's the 30th anniversary of the passing of the divorce referendum. You were a key mover in that particular government. Yes. How do you view that now as a significant social change in our country?
A huge social change, Gerry, and one which we were under enormous pressure for. And I was even accused that I wanted it for myself. So thankfully, I am still very happily married to my good wife, Christy. But very nice social change. Yeah, absolutely. 48 years later, no complaints. But that was a huge social change on a serious note, and one that I think the country, people were saying that all sorts of things would happen in the country would collapse, that family life would collapse, but it was just a necessary social change which should have been brought in at the foundation of the state, as it was, I think Yeats, as a senator, was looking for a divorce to be brought in as a legal entitlement for people, and it was held against us as an impediment to discussions north-south for many, many years. So, good anniversary,
Remarkable.
And I suppose then you'll be ringing me in 10 years' time for the 50th anniversary of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. I look forward to that conversation.
Hopefully we will. I look forward to it too. Dick Leeson, thanks for giving us your time this morning, and thanks for talking to us about those days.
Always a pleasure, Gerry. Thank you.
There's Dick Spring there, former Taoiseach, former leader of the Labour Party, former Kerry TD for many years, talking about the 40th anniversary of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. His views as well, that a lot of difficult, slow, tough groundwork needs to be done in several different areas to the education and the health system and the legal system before you go for a border poll. That's just his view. As he said, other people have a different view. The leader of the Labour Party right now has a different view. She wants a border poll very quickly. And today also, of course, as being marked and being referenced in a lot of the newspapers out there, is the 30th anniversary of the referendum which brought in divorce legislation in this country, a key social change. If you have a view on either of those things, we'd love to hear your opinions on it.